Excellent. Dinner group signups are open. Our groups are open. If you're not currently in a group, make sure that you get plugged into one of those. One of the things that we talk about quite frequently here at Hoboken Grace is that what we do here on Sundays and how we gather and how we're able to celebrate together and how we're able to walk through what God has for us is awesome. But church, real church, actually happens with people engaging life together. And that's what takes place inside of those groups. So make sure that you get signed up for one of those groups. You can do that on the app. If you have questions about it, stop by one of our connection points out in the hallway there, and they can help you navigate that and figure out how you can get connected. For those of you who weren't with us last week, or if you haven't been with us before, my name's Chris, lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and last week we launched into this new conversation called Vision. And we've begun to look at this powerful reality that as God steps into our life, not only does he say that he loves us, not only does he say that he values us, but he steps in and says, listen, I have a vision for your life. There's somewhere that I want to take you. And the one who loves us most, this one who said, listen, I want what's best for you. I want for you to live life to the fullest, has stepped in and said, I have a vision for your life. We looked at this passage last week in Romans Chapter 8, where Paul's writing to the church at Rome, and he's trying to help them understand this, and he says this. He says, for God knew his people in advance, and he chose them to become like his son. He says, listen, I have a vision for you, and as he's describing it to us, he says, I want for you to be like my son. I want in your life, for your life to look like his life, for you to become like my son. Now, here's the problem with this. We talked about this for just a moment last week. The problem with this is that when we hear it, we should be excited, but most of us aren't. We should be excited about God's vision, but when we hear that you get to be like Jesus, the wrong picture comes to mind. But rather than it being a picture that excites us, what we envision, it makes us nervous. And I think that this is a massive problem, a bigger problem than what most of us realize, because God has stepped into our life and said, listen, I want for you to be like my son. And we're like, oh. Because I think our picture is wrong. I remember as a church that I was part of planting before Hoboken Grace, we had just launched our kids area. And so there were only a couple of kids in the kids area. And the teacher was walking them through a story about Jesus. And one of the kids raised their hand and said, well, what does Jesus look like? And the teacher began to explain, well, we don't really know what Jesus exactly looked like. We don't have a picture of him. And another child raised his hand and said, I do. I know what Jesus looks like. And the teacher's like, no, I don't. And he said, no, I know what Jesus looks like. And the teacher said, well, what does Jesus look like? He said, he looks like this. And I remember her sharing that story with me that afternoon. And at first you hear it, it's kind of funny. But the more that I sat with it, I sat there and I just began to cry. Because I thought to myself, to how many people is that the sum of what Jesus is? That's all there is. They know nothing more than that. I think for many of us, when God steps in and says, listen, I want for you to become like him, the picture is wrong. And we see in our mind, and have experienced this as I talked to people about this. We see in our mind someone that's weak. We see in our mind not someone who conquered death, but someone who died. And unfortunately, far too often when we're sharing the message of Jesus, we just talk about how he died for you. We say, well, Jesus died for you, but that's not the full story. That's not the full story of what Jesus did for you. Jesus didn't just die for you. Jesus rose for you. The significance of the resurrection cannot possibly be understated. As a matter of fact, Paul, who wrote that same letter that we just read from, at one point he says to the church, he says, listen, if there is no resurrection from the dead, we're to be the most pitied of all people. He says, this whole thing is about resurrection. The message of Jesus isn't just about forgiveness. It's about resurrection. It's about being made new. And the reason why the early church adopted the symbol of the cross wasn't because, well, it's all about that. The reason why they adopted it is because the cross had previously been used by the Roman Empire to conquer. And the Roman Empire had taken this symbol of a cross and had used it to be able to keep people in submission. And so the only ones who could legally crucify were the Romans. And so this was their symbol. If you mess with us, this is what's going to happen to you. And they used death to oppress. And so the church takes the cross and says, listen, you've used death and the cross to oppress, but we know one who's conquered death. The symbol of the cross was not just about death. It was about the conquering of death. It's the reason why the cross was empty. It's also a reason why there was another symbol that was important to the early church, and that was the symbol of the egg. You may not realize this, but the symbol of the egg has been historically part of the church. It's a symbol of rebirth. We don't just have eggs at Easter because we think bunnies lay eggs. It doesn't actually happen. You realize that, right? And but throughout the church, it's been this symbol of resurrection. This message is not just about one who died for us, but one who rose for us. And one who one day will raise us to be with him. But our image, the picture that comes to our mind, it's not the right image, and we think of him as weak. And sometimes people will say to me that, well, if I become like Jesus, I'm going to get walked over. And make no mistake about it. When we look at how Jesus does what he does, and when we look at his methodology, it wouldn't necessarily be what we would choose, but the reality of it is this: Jesus didn't lose, Jesus won. Jesus was not walked over, Jesus won. But our image is skewed. And I think it's far more important than we realize. Because it shapes how we respond when God steps into our life and says, I want for you to become like him. And so I think for many of us, as we come to this idea of vision and God's vision for us, I think we have to do some work to shatter the way that we've previously seen Christ and to be able to rebuild, okay, what is it that he was actually like? Which means that we're going to have to do the work of actually diving into the story and actually looking at how Jesus lived his life and what it was that characterized him. One of the problems with the way in which our culture is right now is that it's really easy to get information without context. And so for many of us, this is actually how we've formed our vision of Jesus. We've heard different people say different things, and we've heard different sound bites from Jesus' life. But for many of us, we've never actually sat down to read the eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life. That's what Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are. They're the eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life. I always know when I'm talking to someone who's compiled their vision of Jesus from different sound bites and different things that they've heard here or there, but hasn't actually read the eyewitness accounts, because they'll say to me things like, well, you know, Jesus was always nice. And I'm thinking, well, you clearly haven't read the story. There's one point where Jesus looks at the Pharisees and says, listen, you need to understand something. You're going to hell and you're leading all these people there too. And you look at that moment and you realize, wait, maybe what we've compiled are these sound bites and these little pieces. It doesn't actually accurately reflect who it was that Jesus was. And we have to do the work of being able to go into it and look at, okay, no, what was Jesus' life actually like? And when you begin to read through the eyewitness accounts, you find someone who's remarkable. When you look at Jesus' life, you see someone who is fearless. Who's absolutely, positively fearless. It doesn't matter what the circumstance is. It doesn't matter what he's up against. One of the things that I really love about the eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life is that they capture this moment right before he goes to the cross. He's in the garden and he knows what's about to happen. And I love this. I think it's an incredible gift to us, because in this moment, you see him struggling with what he's about to go through. And he knows the pain that he's about to endure. And he knows the fact that he's going to be separated from the Father. And he's struggling with it. And one of the things that I love about this is that sometimes when you look at Jesus' life and the way that he lives his life, you think he doesn't experience fear. The garden lets us see that he does experience fear. He just isn't stopped by it. He's fearless. It doesn't matter what he's coming up against. You see someone who lives his life without worry. He's never worried. He frequently talks to his disciples about this. Like, why are you guys always worried? You guys worry all the time. But he lives his entire life without worry. Let me ask you something. What would your life be like if you didn't worry? Just think about it for a moment. Let me ask you another question. How much of your life do you spend worrying? If you were to honestly sit down and calculate it, how much of your life do you spend worrying? Not just the way that you worry about the future, the way that you worry about what's going to happen at your job tomorrow. What about all the time that you spend worrying about that conversation that you had on your way in and whether or not you said it right? What percentage of your life do you spend worrying? For those of you who know me, you know that I struggle with obsessive compulsiveness and perfection. That number is really high for me. Really high. Jesus lived his life without worry. You look at his story, you see someone who's completely confident about his purpose. But why it is that he's here and what it is that he's been created to do, you see someone who's content. You see someone who is remarkably effective and efficient. He changes the whole world in 3 years. You see someone who is incredibly wise. Phenomenally wise. You see someone who was magnetic. Crowds are drawn to him, not just because of his content, but because of who he was. They're attracted to him. For most of us, when God steps in and says, listen, I want for you to become like my son, the picture that comes to mind is not accurate to who he actually was. I think the thing that captures this best, who was Jesus really? If you were to capture who he was and the essence of who he was, the passage that captures it best is probably found in Galatians chapter 5. And the writer's writing to the church, and he's trying to help them understand what will be true of them as God's Spirit becomes more and more a part of their life, as God's vision becomes more reality of their life. And this is what he says is going to be true of them as that vision becomes a reality. It says, but the Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I don't think there's anything that captures Jesus more than as you read through that list, and you want to talk about someone who's loving. Every moment of Jesus' life is about love. And it doesn't matter who he comes in contact with, Jesus is constantly loving. And sometimes I'll say that to people, and they'll say, well, what about the conversation with the Pharisees where Jesus looks at the Pharisees and says, listen, you're going to hell, and you're leading everyone around you to hell as well. It doesn't sound like love, but the reality is it's absolutely love, because Jesus knew that what they needed more than anything else was to realize the direction in which they were headed. And sometimes people look at Jesus' interaction with the Pharisees and they think that, well, Jesus was opposed to the Pharisees. No. Jesus was working to reach the Pharisees. And you misunderstand. As a matter of fact, as you read through the eyewitness accounts, you find that many Pharisees actually came to believe in Jesus because of the interaction that he has with them and the way that he engages them. And as you move into the book of Acts, you see that even more of the religious leaders and Pharisees come to follow him, including one of which who wrote the book of Romans, named Paul. Every person that he comes in contact with, he's loving them. Jesus isn't for and against. Jesus is for. He's loving them. When you look at joy, Jesus was full of joy. People are drawn to him. Unfortunately, many times in the scriptures where Jesus is using sarcasm and making a joke, we don't understand it because it doesn't translate well. But Jesus was full of joy and life. One of the reasons why we know this is kids are drawn to Jesus. Kids love to be around Jesus. You know what I know about kids? Kids don't like miserable people. They don't like them. The other thing that you see, that Jesus is constantly being invited to parties, not parties like boring parties, like good, real parties, like lively parties, crazy parties, and he's constantly being invited. You don't invite boring people to parties like that. It's full of joy, peace. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. It doesn't matter whether he's on a beautiful lakeside or whether he's in the midst of a storm. He has remarkable peace. He's always at peace. Patience. Can you imagine what it was like to be Jesus and deal with people? Just think of what it's like to be you and deal with people. It takes a tremendous amount of patience for you, and you're screwed up. Just imagine if you weren't. Kindness. There's a big difference between kindness and niceness. But Jesus was kind. When When you look at Jesus' life, you see that vulnerable people are drawn to him. Why? Because he's kind. Shockingly kind, faithful. Jesus is consistently faithful, and he says, listen, this is what I'm going to do, and he's faithful to carry it out. He follows through. This next one that we see is a little bit interesting because the word that the New Living Translation uses is this word gentleness. Now this one's a little bit misunderstood because the original word here is really hard to capture in English. Now, there's a way for you to be able to see that. As a matter of fact, as you're on this journey longer and longer, one of the things that I highly recommend and that we teach here at Hoboken Grace is to not always read the same translation each time that you read through the scriptures, but to switch translations. One of the things that is very valuable as you switch translations is that sometimes you'll come to a passage and you'll see that different translations are using different words. Whenever you see that at least three translations that are using different words for the same word, what you see happening there is there's not really a good English word for what they're describing. And when you come to this, it's the exact same idea. The word that they used to use, which is the word meekness, is a word that we don't really use in our culture anymore. So when's the last time you heard someone described as meek? Well, not ever for most of you because you're so young that it was gone before you came around. But the problem is that we heard the word meekness and we thought that it was weakness. And it lost its meaning inside of our culture. The word meekness is actually really powerful, and it's probably the better word to describe what he's describing here. And this idea of meekness, it isn't weakness at all. As a matter of fact, the picture that best captures what he's talking about here is this idea of a stallion that's been broken, a stallion that's been tamed. Phenomenal power, but very safe. And he's saying, this is the fruit of God's Spirit. Phenomenal power, but yet at the same time, safe. Can there be something that captures Jesus more than that? I mean, what remarkable power, and yet always under control. And even in the face of being put on the cross, he knows what he can do, and yet at the same time, because of the fact that he loves you, he goes there willingly. I think the idea is a little bit deeper than the idea of just gentleness. Gentleness, again, can connotate a lack of strength, but he said, no. It's incredible strength and yet tame, safe. And then this last one, self-control, to be constantly in control of yourself. Can you imagine what it would be like to be the creator of the world and to stand there as they spit on you? Can you imagine what it would be like to be the creator of the world and to lie there as they drive those nails into your hands? Well, that's a self-control that I don't have. And I'm betting you don't either. But this is who Jesus actually is. If you take the time to read the eyewitness accounts, you see something that is far greater than the picture that normally comes to our mind. And let me just ask you, when you look at that and you see those things, let me ask you, what would you be like if those things were true of you? What would you be like if those things were true of you, if that's who you were? Not just how you act, but that's who you were. And this is really important when it comes to vision as well. This is another mistake that we make. Because typically, when I talk to people about vision, even last week, as I'm talking to you about your vision for life and God has a vision for your life, almost all of us, we think out here. We think circumstantial. So I ask people about their vision for the next year, and they describe their circumstances. They describe what their family's going to look like. They describe what their relationships are going to look like. They describe what their friendships are going to look like. They describe what their job's going to look like. They describe what their career's going to look like. It's all out here. It's all circumstantial. God's vision for you is not circumstantial. It's about who you are, not just what's happening in your life. It's about who you are. And as God steps into your life and says, listen, I've got a vision for you, it's about something far greater than the circumstances. Because the reality is you can't control the circumstances. You can't control that. But you can absolutely control who you are in the midst of them. And God has stepped into our lives and said, I have a vision for you. It's above circumstance. It's something that can be true of you in every circumstance. It has to do with who you are. And I want for you, with who you are, to become like him. I love the way that the psalmist captures it in Psalm 1. It's a passage that I come back to over and over and over and over again in my life. I think if there was a passage that I want to capture my life more than anything else, I think it would be this one. And I think it connects directly to what God is trying to speak into our lives. It's found in Psalm chapter 1. It starts off in verse 3. It says this. It says, they, and it's talking about those who are pursuing God. It's those who delight in what God is speaking into their life and delight in God's word. And then it says this about them. It says, they are like trees planted along the riverbank, bearing fruit each season. Their leaves never wither, and they prosper in all that they do. Just leave that passage up here for just a second. They are like trees planted along the riverbank, bearing fruit each season. Their leaves never wither, and they prosper in all that they do. Can I ask you something? When you read that, do you want to be like that? Do you want that? That's what it means to be like Jesus. He was the one whose leaf never withered. He was the one who bared fruit in each season, no matter what the circumstance was, no matter what was happening. That's what it means to be like Jesus. And God has stepped into your life and said, I have a vision for you. It's about who you're going to become. And you're going to become like one who's like a solid tree, an unshakable tree that's planted beside a river bank. And I love the picture that he's painting there, because he's saying that tree, well, where does it get its nutrients from? It's from that river. It's this picture of one who's deriving its nutrients from the Father, who's deriving its nutrients from God. And he said, I want for you to be like that. That's constantly, constantly being watered by me. That's constantly receiving by me. And you grow strong and unmovable. And it doesn't matter what the circumstances are, because here's the reality of it. The reality of it is the circumstances are going to change all the time. And we can't control it, but we can become like, and God's saying, I want to make you like this tree that's unmovable, that bears fruit in every season, no matter what's happening. No matter what the circumstance is. But we have to reshape our vision of who he was. So that when God steps into our life and says this, rather than us hesitating, that we become incredibly excited about what God has in store for us. This journey for me began several years ago. because I was in the midst of a conversation and someone said that to me. They said, yeah, but Chris, God is working for you to become like his son. And when he said it to me, rather than me being excited about it, I took a step back. I was hesitant. This was a couple years ago, not like 20 years ago. Like, I was a pastor. Why, as a pastor, am I hearing you get to become like Jesus and I'm taking a step back? And I went home and I sat down and I said, something's wrong. Something is wrong. And I realized I needed to destroy how I looked at Jesus and to rebuild it with the reality of who he actually was and the truth of what God is leading me to and calling me to and what God is working for in my life. And for me to begin to reshape my vision around the reality of what I see in him. Last week we talked about how we all have visions for our lives. These things are compiled by different things in different places and different situations, but oftentimes it's compiled by a variety of different heroes that we have over time. And so you encounter someone as you're growing up and you're like, man, I want to be like that person. I want to grow up to be like that person. And then you encounter a teacher as you're moving through school, or maybe it's a classmate as you're moving through college, or maybe it's someone that you're working with and you're like, man, I want to be like them. And slowly we begin to compile, okay, this is where I'm going. This is what I want to look like. All of us have done this. And at different points in our lives, it looks differently. When I was a kid, more than anything else in the world, all I wanted to do was play professional basketball. That was it. That was my life goal. I was way too short. And people used to tell me all the time, it's not going to happen. But I was like, no, it is going to happen. Even my dad, who's super supportive, used to say to me all the time, you should play baseball. You're never going to make it in basketball. You should play baseball. You're never going to make it in basketball. I blame him to this day for why I didn't make it. I just didn't feel like I was nourished in my dream. And growing up, my walls were covered with posters of the greatest basketball player who ever will play. I don't care who you are and what you say. His name was Michael Jordan. And I would wake up every day and I'd look at those walls and I'd say, I want to be like him. And I worked to walk like him. I worked to shoot like him. I dressed like him. Yeah, it was awkward. Try to hide those pictures. That was my vision. God has stepped into our lives and said, it's time to put someone else on the wall. But the poster in our heads is wrong. We got to rebuild it. We got to reshape it with the reality of who he actually was, which is why as we walk through this, my invitation to you today is to join us, because right now in our New Testament reading plan, we're reading through the eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life. Right now, we've just gotten into the book of Matthew. And we're going to begin reading through these eyewitness accounts. And I want to invite you to join us in that so that you can rebuild, okay, what is it that it looks like to actually be like Jesus? And for you to begin to develop the hero that is actually a hero in your life, and for you to be able to reshape that vision. A big part of why we spend time with God on a daily basis is for us to be able to wake up in the morning and to be able to look at that wall and say, I want to be like him. I want to be fearless like that. I want to be worry-free like that. I want to love like that. I want to be patient like that. We've got to change the vision. We've got to shift the vision. And the remarkable thing is this. The remarkable thing, listen, come here. The remarkable thing is this. God has stepped into your life and said, I'm working for that. The God of heaven and earth has stepped into your life and said, I'm working for that. I want for you to live life like that. I want for you to be that tree. I want for you to be that kind of dad. I want for you to be that kind of friend. I want for you to be that kind of coworker. I want for you to be that person. That's what he's working for. You don't have to be afraid of his vision. It's remarkable. It's remarkable. And that's where he wants to take you. Will you pray with me? Father, as we walk through this, I pray that you would give us eyes to see. I pray that we'd be able to see the reality of who your son actually was. That as we come together today and as we move through and read through these eyewitness accounts of his life, that we'd be able to see the power of his love, that we'd be able to see his unbelievable joy, that we'd be able to see how incredibly confident and secure he was, that we'd be able to see how he lived his life without worry, that we'd be able to see the truth of both who he was and who you're working for us to become. Father, I thank you that you have loved us, that you value us. And Father, I'm so incredibly thankful for the fact that you have a vision for us, that we could become like that tree, whose leaf never withers, that bears fruit in every season. Father, we want to join you in that vision. In Jesus' name.